Jim.
Shane, hello,
How are
sir.
you, sir?
Doing well, man. How are you?
I'm good. Doing great. Glad to see you here.
You as well.
Just letting in some people. Dorothy, welcome.
Thank you. Hi. Good to see
So
you.
fun to have you guys. So great.
Yeah.
Right. Got some peeps joining. Some more coming, I'm sure, later. All right. So welcome, everybody. Today is the last session of the 12 weeks where I started going through a 12-week cycle. So we are restarting. We're not restarting. Next week we'll restart. I was misspoken last week. So today we are going to be doing the final session. And those of you that started on week one, this is your last week. And those of you that started somewhere in the middle, you're going to be cycling back through. And so you will not see this one again unless you re-up for more time on the calls and things like that. So we are today, you're going to find this material in module five. And I'm going to cherry pick one of the elements from module five that I find to be really, really helpful. And it's one of the things that, oddly enough, I haven't seen really anywhere in any kind of leadership or management or organizational design or any of that stuff. I learned it in a totally bizarre place and began to apply it in corporations and companies and just found it to be immensely helpful in cutting through gridlock, complexity, all kinds of things. So it's called polarity management. If you're not familiar with my book, it's called The Seven Management Polarities. One of my books was recently released, and I go into greater detail on individual polarities instead of company or group polarities, and those can be found in that book. And at some point, we're going to try to get copies to everybody when I get my integrator to work all that out. So anyway, that's what's happening today. Let me share my screen and then we're going to get started. And I'm in the wrong spot, of course. Okay. Hopefully this will work. Lately, things have been pausing on me. Are we seeing this, everybody? Yes. I think we are. Okay. We're still seeing a screen, whole bunch of make smarter decisions faster. Okay, great. So really, this is what the purpose is. Now, obviously, we're going to be talking about polarity management, but why should we be talking about polarity management? The reason is to make smarter decisions faster. If a leader has two main things, one of them is their words, their language, their conversations. The other big thing a leader has is decisions they make. So as you make decisions, you are creating change, you're moving things down the road. And sometimes decisions get hard to make when there's complexity, when there's disagreement, when there's competing agendas. And so that's kind of the purpose of what we're doing today. And I'm going to just make sure that I have the participants list up so that I can make sure there's no one else I need to let in. Yes, we're good. Okay, so here's where we're going to start. Come on, Prezi, get to work. So MIT has something called the Center for Collective Intelligence, and they explored how if there was such a thing as group intelligence. And one of the things they found is that groups, and they studied IQ, education level, income level, cultures, all kinds of things. They found there was no differentiator that would make a group smarter than an individual, except for one key ingredient. And that was if there was a woman present, you started to make better decisions as a group. So, yay, women. If you had two women present in a team, even better decisions happened. Three, even better decisions happened. After three, it stabilized. So, yes, we celebrate that women make teams smarter, but it also turns out to be true the other way, which is if you had only women in a team and a man showed up, the team got a little bit smarter. And the reason for this is we believe diversity of perspective. And so this is an important thing. So when you have a homogenous team, that's one of the things that happens. Now, the point in me saying that is that there are really two things they found out. One is social sensitivity can help people make better decisions in a team. And the other is diverse points of view. So that's part of the reason why having women present was so much more powerful than just having a man present. There was lots of social sensitivity. And so that's why. Now, hold on, just inviting Divya in. So what we're going to talk about here is this is going to help you navigate issues more easily when we talk about polarity management. People are going to be more open to change. This is one of the biggest challenges leaders have, is getting people bought into change. You're going to be able to see more pathways. And so the starting point is to realize that all organizations exist to sense tensions. What is a tension? Well, a tension is merely a gap between what is currently being experienced and what you imagine might be possible. That's what a tension is. And a tension can be negative or positive. So you see kind of down the middle there, is where you are now. So it could be that this is where we sense we should be, meaning it's something's broken and it needs to be fixed. And then there's the opportunity side of attention, which is this is where we sense we could be. And there's a tension that exists there. And so it's more like we're doing okay, but I bet we could do a whole lot better if we did X. So this is really all that's happening, is people are in an ongoing way sensing tensions, and they're either problems or opportunities. That's usually what's going on. However, there is a third category that exists. There are three tensions: opportunities, problems, and polarities. So let's define what we mean by that. Before we do that, here's a common debate that I've heard many, many times in an organization. We need to standardize our processes. We're wasting too much time reinventing the wheel. No. We need to keep innovating and creating new approaches to stay ahead of the competition. Or maybe this one: we need to cut our expenses to ensure we're prepared for any possible downturn. No, we need to invest in our people and our business to stay relevant and meet our goals. So how many times have you heard those kinds of problems? Maybe you haven't heard them personally, but this is like really, really standard. And each of these is debating what is called a polarity instead of a problem. And as a consequence, I've got dogs here. I've got animals here that are being playful and difficult. What happens is we need to understand the distinction between a problem and a polarity. So one of the things that happens in organizations is when leaders think they're dealing with a problem, but it's actually a polarity, they're going to have endless tensions and conversations and waste a lot of time. So a problem is something you can solve. It has a clear beginning and an end. A polarity is something you can only manage. A problem has independent alternatives. A polarity has interdependent values. And this sounds very abstract right now. In a minute, I'm going to make it really clear to you what I mean by this. Problems have exclusive opposites. Polarity is an inclusive paradox. Problems are actually avoidable. Polarities are inevitable. So what do I mean by polarity and problem? Now, problem is this employee isn't performing. Well, you either performance manage them or you terminate them, right? There's kind of, it's how you solve it. We're over budget. That's a problem. We can solve it. Should we invest in innovation or standardization is a polarity. The answer is yes. Should we be centralized or should we be decentralized? Yes. Should we be short-term or long-term? Yes. These things coexist and cannot be undone. And so you have to deal with them differently. So here is the basic definition of a polarity. It's a pair of interdependent positive or neutral opposites, and both poles are needed to achieve balance. So here are some of the underlying dynamics of them. Oh my goodness. Sorry. Is everybody there? This dog just walked all over my keyboard. I hope you guys can see everything here. This dog's been sitting here for like hours, totally chill, not making a move. And now, of course, now he wants to get up and play around. Okay. All right. Is everybody with me? Can I get a nodding? Thank you. Appreciate that. So here are some polarity dynamics. The first thing is that the two poles support and feed each other. Breathing is the most fundamental human polarity. You have to breathe in order to breathe out. They are mutually dependent. They require one another. So that's how polarities work. First dynamic. The second dynamic is that the expression of one creates the need for the other. So when I exercise, it actually creates the need for resting. So exercise demands rest. And rest, if you rest too much, you're going to need some exercise. So the more I value one side of a polarity, the more I will tolerate its downside, and the more I will fear the downside of the other. Let me explain what I mean by that. If I fear that we're going to lose lots of money, and I value being conservative and predictable, it means that I will be willing to tolerate the downside of not innovating. There are downsides, and I'm willing to tolerate it. And I will also become more fearful of what might happen if we innovate too much. So I'm going to be indexed on one pole, and I will tolerate its negative more, and I will fear the negative of the other more. So that's another kind of dynamic here. So let's look at some examples of a polarity. And this is called a polarity map, okay? And here's what it looks like. So on one side, you have centralized, right? A centralized value, which is authority is established, monitored by management, right? And that's one side. On the other side, you have decentralized, where people are given autonomy and authority. More autonomy is given to frontline players, okay? So both of these have to exist on some level. The question is, there is a positive and negative to each. Do you see it? So what might be the positive value of a centralized organization? What are the things that you gain when you centralize? Feel free to speak. Unmute yourself. It's okay to participate, friends. I'm here all afternoon.
You have efficiency.
Efficiency. Great. Yep. What's another one?
Clarity.
Clarity. I think that's right. Yeah. So I put also integrated and coordinated. So that's connected to those two things. What's the negative side? What happens when you're overly centralized? What do you lose?
Adaptability.
Adaptability. Good. What else?
Speed and ability to pivot.
Yeah. Could be. Yep. Speed. Yep. So I say it's rigid. There's bottlenecking. So that's related to the same thing. Okay, good. What's the positive of decentralized when you have autonomy and authority given to frontline players? What do you gain?
Teams that are self-reliant.
Yes. Yes. What else?
Speed. Less managing. Is that speed? Less managing.
Right.
Yep. That's right.
They're not managed, yeah.
Good. Yeah. So I also said empowerment and adaptability. You might even get more engagement depending on the kind of company you're a part of. What's the downside of decentralizing?
Too many cooks in the kitchen.
It's not scalable.
Not scalable. Yeah. What else?
They might not do it to your expectation.
Yep. Yep. That's right. Also silos and inefficiencies can abound. So we've kind of talked about that. So that is a basic polarity map. It's not terribly complicated to do, but it's really interesting when people don't realize they're having this debate, you end up going in circles. So I literally did this just like 2 months ago with a robotics company. They were dealing with a very, very complex set of machine learning problems and AI and trying to figure out what's what. And so the software team had one view, the operations team had another view, the solutions team, they were all debating. They couldn't find their way. And for 2 years, they just endlessly debated and couldn't find agreement. And I just sat down with them, spent basically an hour identifying the three main polarities they were fighting about. And then we did a polarity map. And at the end of the polarity map, they were all able to see clearly, like, oh, that's what we're debating. So this is never going to end. We're always going to have to do this. And so now we have to make a choice. Which one are you going to privilege over the other for a period of time deliberately, knowing that there are downsides to it?
you don't get the choice of not doing anything. That isn't one of your choices. One of your choices is not permanently ending the conversation either. Your only choice is for a season, you know, let's say you're struggling with being centralized or decentralized. For a season, you might go, we're going to centralize and we're going to over-index on centralizing, recognizing that there are downsides, and we're going to look for early warning signs. And then at a certain point, we'll stabilize and we'll rebalance. So the goal is not permanently to balance everything. The goal is to know, should you sometimes privilege one over the other to create greater stability or to create greater innovation? So a long-term, well-established big company may need to privilege innovation over standardization for a period of time. Whereas a scaling, growing startup may need to privilege standardization over innovation because they're going to die of indigestion. There's just too many new ideas, too many new things flying around. And you need to basically go, we're picking these three. We're going to do those three really well. We're going to try to scale. And so you can see how, depending on where you are, what kind of organization or industry, you may need very different kinds of polarity emphases. So makes sense to everybody so far? Comments or questions? Good. So within 2 hours, we had resolved a two-year debate in that company. We were able to line them around which poll they were going to choose. And we were able to develop OKRs and a strategy around it. And they're moving rapidly now. They were totally stuck and going in circles for almost 2 years until I introduced this. So just know that this can be quite useful. It's not useful to everybody all the time, but sometimes it's quite a game changer if you feel stuck. Sometimes just ask yourself, am I dealing with a problem or is this a polarity? Okay. Now what we're going to do is an individual polarity map. So that's more like group organizational polarities, but there's also individual polarities. So I'm going to ask you to do this also. So if you have a piece of paper, divide into a quadrant, do two bubbles on either side. Quadrant one, lower left-hand corner. Quadrant two is top right. Quadrant three, lower right. Quadrant four, upper left. And what I'm going to ask you to do, and I'm going to do it first, I'm going to give you a prompt. And the prompt is in the first quadrant, sometimes I think I'm two. And this is at the core of leadership is self-awareness, right? So we're bringing more self-awareness to what it is that we bring and why. Sometimes I think I am two. Well, in my case, I wrote down too focused on meeting the needs of others, even when they don't ask for it. That's sometimes I think I'm too much like that. So that's one. Next. At those times, I wish I were more what? Well, maybe able to sit back and see what's happening before I rush in to help. What I fear might happen if I do too much of the above. What I fear might happen if I do too much of the above. Well, people I care about will suffer unnecessarily when I know I can help. So that's what I'm fearing. I've named it. Quadrant four, what I value, too much of which can lead to the situation below, which is me helping people, right? When they don't ask for it. Well, I value compassion and kindness towards others. That's a key value of mine, okay? So now you have this. And what I want you to do is after you've taken a trait that you sometimes feel you're too much of, you're going to name that trait. What is in that empty bubble? Doesn't matter what word you choose. I'm going to pick one. Helpful. Okay, that's something that I care about and value, being helpful. Then what you do is you name the opposite pole. Now, the opposite pole needs to be listed as positive or neutral. It can't be negative. So if you want my honest answer, the opposite of being helpful is being selfish. But that isn't going to help me because now I've created a polarity that I will resist one side and only appreciate the other. Right? So can't use selfish. What's another word that's positive or neutral if it's not selfish? So what's the opposite of helpful that would be positive or neutral that isn't selfish? Anybody?
Ambivalent.
Is that considered neutral to you? Or does it feel negative?
It to me, it feels negative, but.
Okay. So that's okay. There is, this isn't about dictionary definition. It's about what the association is for each person, right? So if you feel like that's negative, you couldn't use that one. What's another one? What's a word that feels neutral?
What about like empowering or something in that vein?
Yeah. Empowering can be good. Like, yeah. I like that. That's positive for sure. So I chose observing, like just sitting back and watching without having to rush in. That's the opposite of being helpful, is just observing, right? So I want you to take a moment and do this for yourself. Take like 3 minutes and actually map out, pick any old personality trait, thing that you think you might be too much of, and write down. Sometimes I think I'm too what? At those times, I wish I were more. Write that down. What I fear might happen if I do too much of the above. So take a moment, run through that. If you have any questions, let me know. I'll be right back.
Hysterical, that tail wagging.
I know. I was like, wait, is that a dog?
Just watching the tail is great.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
All right, I'm dog free now. Okay. Who would like to share theirs? You don't have to name everything. You don't have to get through it all. I'll help you with it as you go. But who would like to volunteer?
I'm not done yet.
Okay, take your time.
Yeah, I need some more time too.
Take your time.
I got 2 squares done. Maybe okay. You can have the other 2. Okay. So sometimes I think I push too hard to get ahead. Okay. So I'm always pushing my team to keep moving faster. They hardly get to catch their breath. And I'm like, okay, we got that accomplished. Just keep moving forward. Okay. You know? And so I wish I could just kind of find a happy medium where, I mean, I know we got to push forward, but where I was a little bit more of a happy medium.
At those times, I wish I could find a more happy medium. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah, more of a happy medium. And the reason I do it is because I fear that if I don't, then we'll get stagnant and that employees won't see that there's opportunities ahead, because then there'll be a ceiling. There'll be a ceiling and they won't be able to move ahead. What value can lead to the situation? I don't know. That's what I was trying to work. I was working on.
Okay. Take a moment and see if you can come up with an answer.
Okay.
A huge part of this exercise is actually what you personally generate. Each individual generates is where the power of this exercise comes from. And there is an aha behind it when you're ready for it. So if you're just sitting back and observing but not participating, you're missing an opportunity for transformation in your life.
I had a lot of the same lines, same thing as yours, because when someone brings me a problem, I want to fix it.
Okay.
Whether they're asking me for help or not. So I didn't want to use the same thing you said. So I would say, I think I'm too reactive.
Okay, great.
I wish I was more observant and could sit back and let people figure things out for themselves.
Okay.
Which comes in me over talking them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid things will fall through the cracks.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're dealing with people's money and lives. But I don't know what I'm valuing too much to make me do that. Whether I want to be right all the time, or do I really want to solve the problem?
So take some time and investigate that. It's okay. We have a little bit of time. I want you to really think it's important that you try to generate. This is good. This is good. It's important that you try to generate what you value, too much of which leads to becoming reactive. There's something you value. And by the way, value is not a bad thing. It doesn't mean you're, you know, compassion and kindness are good things to value. So there's something.
Okay, I'm ready.
All right, fire away, Allie.
All right, so sometimes I think I'm too focused on doing the best I can or making sure something is right, which we talked about with the Enneagram.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I wish I was more flexible, and I couldn't really think of the word, but just like... just able to like get shit done.
So you mean you wish you were more flexible and what could I say, efficient?
But it's not that, it's like, I don't know, faster, like doing things more quickly.
Yeah, sure. That's fine. More quickly. Yeah, great. Mm-hmm.
But I fear if I do that too much, then something will go wrong, or people will think that like I'm not good at what I do, or you know, something like that.
Great.
And what I ultimately value is quality work.
Good. Awesome.
And my two words were perfection and progress, which is a little bit of a cliche because I feel like you see that everywhere, like progress over perfection, but it's just so true for me. I don't know if you would choose different words.
Doesn't matter what I would choose. The main thing is that you experience it as an opposite. Do you feel that progress is the opposite of perfection?
I mean, if I don't want it to be negative, if I want it to be neutral.
So what is another word that is the opposite of perfect, but is still neutral or positive in your mind?
I don't know. That's the
problem. I'll tell you what one of my clients said that I thought was pretty funny and quite revealing. The opposite of perfection, when I asked, he said freedom.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one.
I'm not saying that's yours, Allie. I'm not saying that's yours. But I'm telling you that for him,
mm-hmm.
that was like a door that opened for him in his own development. Understanding that that's what he was, you know, you would think fighting against perfection is failure. And in fact, for him, the opposite was freedom. That he just wasn't allowing himself to be free. He wasn't allowing himself to have some of that freedom. That's not what I'm saying for you, right? Because you use the word perfect in a way that is completely unique to you. And mm-hmm. his word for perfect meant something different to him, right? But I guess what I'm just trying to show you all is that there are these surprising opposites. It's not about the dictionary definition of the opposite. It's about doing a projective technique of your own soul that will surface for you a powerful opposite. So I would have never in a million years, if I hadn't done this exercise, come up with the opposite of helpful is observing. But it became a really useful word for me. When I would see something come up, I'd go, do I need to observe? And I was like, oh, I don't want to observe. I want to go help. It's like, well, that's interesting. Go ahead and observe for a little longer. Many times things would just clear up without me intervening. It was like, oh, okay, I guess I don't have to be that important. So at the heart of a polarity map, individual polarity map, is what personality profiles are. It's what the Enneagram is mapping. You could take your Enneagram type and map it on this polarity map. I did the two here. This is the two on the Enneagram. It's the kind of the archetype of the two. Okay, who else would like to share? Who else is struggling? Who else is looking at this going, I don't get this. This is silly and dumb.
Share. So I said sometimes I think I'm too hesitant to push or give hard feedback until it has reached a boiling point. So, you know, I'm either too soft or I'm too intense because I've let it go on too long and I struggle to strike the right balance.
Okay.
And at those times, I wish I were more direct earlier. And what I fear might happen if I do too much of that is my team won't like me. So basically, like, they won't like me if I'm too intense, or they won't respect me if I'm too soft. Mm-hmm. And you know what I value, like I'm an Enneagram too. And so I really value being liked and appreciated. So I think that leads to this.
Good. Excellent. So what were the bubbles you filled in?
I didn't do the bubbles. So
you get an incomplete for your grade.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess it would be like on the left side, hesitant, and on the right side, direct.
So give me the positive on the right. Hesitant is not a positive word, I don't think. Do you associate that with positive? Okay, good.
No, it's not.
What's a positive. The positive word? The clue is in the value that you created, right?
Yeah. I mean, but I don't think being liked is like necessarily a good value.
But like being understood might be a valid thing.
Yeah. I guess like understanding, like I'm like too under, like I'm too understanding about mistakes. And then it like, if they happen over and over, then it reaches a boiling point and then I'm mad and then I'm like, you know, too intense. So I think maybe too understanding on the right or on the left.
Yeah, not too understanding, just understanding. So remember, this is, they're both positive or neutral. There is no negative here. You're not trying to beat yourself up on either side. So on one side, you like to be understanding. Mm-hmm. What is the opposite of understanding, of being understanding?
I'm trying to think of a word that gets it, like being, like insisting on quality or like insisting on, like accuracy.
I just want you to know that the pause and the struggle indicate there's something useful there. Like that difficulty in finding the word isn't just like, oh, my brain can't think of the right word. It's literally your psyche working through something important to establish it. And that's why I don't give you the word, because your part of you will find the word. And when it does, it will mean something to you. And this is true for all of you. So I'm not just working with Dorothy. Like, as you think about the opposite, if it came really super quick, it means you probably avoided the work. Like, Allie, it's possible you might have avoided it.
I think so.
Just because you had like it already queued up from a crocheted pillow. I'm just kidding. That wasn't. You mentioned cliche, but.
No, totally.
I think I found my words.
Okay. Damia, why don't you go ahead and Dorothy will come back to you.
Number one, I think I'm too reactive or can be considered judgmental. I wish I would listen more and let them find their own way or try to steer them in a way. I'm afraid that things will fall through the cracks, or they'll take too long to fix it, or they will get the repercussion if something happens. If I do this too much, I'm not wanting others to struggle. I'm not wanting them to face a repercussion. So I'll jump in to save them. The two words I come up with, it was just like, what is either mentoring or trust on the left-hand side? And the word on the right is protective. I'm too protective.
On the left-hand side is what?
Either mentoring or trust.
Okay. Mentoring or trust. And the opposite is?
Protective.
Okay. Do you feel protective is neutral or positive for you?
I feel it's positive for me, but if it's too much of it, it can be very negative.
Anything can be negative where there's too much of it. So we're looking for the one word that feels like it's an opposite. So does it feel like being you're being protective of them? Mm-hmm. Is that what you're saying? Does that feel like the opposite of mentoring someone?
It does. Because if I'm protective, I'm leading them every step of the way and won't let them allow them to find their own way, even though we can come to the same solution.
Okay. All right, good. Dorothy? That's okay. That's okay. Let this live in you a little bit, because the word that's on the right is if you've done the exercise in kind of the right way, the word that's on the right, there's a single word that is our invitation. It's our invitation to be more of that. So I think what you've said is actually the opposite. So I would actually put protective on the left, and I might put mentoring, or there might be another, what's the opposite of protective, you know? So the word can change. What is the opposite of protective? When you hear me say protective, I'm protective of my team. What's the opposite of being protective? May not be the same words.
Supporting.
Supporting. Okay. And that's unique to you. Like, so for you, that's an opposite. For others, they may be like, what? Supporting is protecting. What are you talking about? That's the one and the same. That's synonymous. But for you, it reads and feels like an opposite. And if it truly does read like an opposite, then you've done the work. So again, there are plenty of times that I'll do this with someone and they aren't ready to face the thing. And so they do little like quick squiggly, like, yep, I got it. I did it. Thanks. But they haven't actually looked in the mirror of like what I'm really not being honest with myself about. And by the way, there's no requirement that you are. I'm only here to give you an opportunity to do that. If you're not in a place to do that, or you don't really feel like doing that, no problem. But I'm just letting you know, this is part of the work of leadership development, is that looking in the mirror piece, where we start going, who am I? What do I keep bringing? How do I keep showing up? Why am I in this habituated pattern that I can't seem to see, you know, fight my way out of? And this is one tool among many that we do in this program that is designed to kind of, when you feel stuck and cornered in a particular loop, to go, oh, there's like, I can go right instead of left. That's really interesting. Dorothy, did you come up with anything?
Got it. Okay. Yeah. So I think what I've gotten to is understanding on the left and educating on the right. Ooh. So rather than just like letting something slide and like hoping it doesn't happen again, like taking the time to like educate and
That was perfect. So now that word educating, you did it without me doing it, right? I didn't even coach you. You have now reframed something that was scary for you, something that you were troubled by, which is correcting someone, correcting bad behavior. So if I said to you, your job is to correct bad behavior, you'd be like, you'd lock up and be like, I don't like doing that. But if I said, your job is merely educating, suddenly you're like, I can educate. I know how to educate people. So that's super helpful. Could you feel the emotional difference?
Yeah, that really feels like the right word. Yeah.
I love it. And can you feel that it's lighter?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. Anybody else want to take a swing?
Yeah, I kind of thought of my part a little bit more. So I figured out on number one, sometimes I think I push too hard. I think I'm just a driver. I just keep driving the team forward, you know, without any breaks between successes.
Yeah.
And so then, what I said is what I value is I value growth and quality. So I value, and I've always been like that since I can remember. So I think the opposite of me driving the staff is enjoying the level we're at and letting the staff enjoy that level for a while before we move.
Great insight. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Let me flag for you. You just, now that you've come up with the word, I can add some words. So the other thing that I want to suggest to you is, it's time for you to get really good at celebrating.
Okay.
So when you initiate a project, at the beginning of the project, decide how you're going to celebrate the completion of it.
Okay.
And you can make three different levels if you want and say, if we achieve this on this project, then we're going to celebrate this big. And if we achieve this, we're going to celebrate this big. And if we achieve this, we're going to celebrate this big. You can calibrate if you want. But the point is, get really good at celebrating. This is true for anybody, by the way. All of us need to. But what you named, this is a very strategic thing for you, which is celebrations, commemorations, recognitions, rewards. These are all things that feed into a culture of engagement. And right. So getting really good at, like, I'm a really good celebrator. That would be a great thing for you to have as your identity.
Like it.
I'm like Renee, it. I'm really good at celebrating. You know, that's amazing.
Yeah. It's just hard to think of how to celebrate sometimes, but I've thought of that.
Yes. And a celebration can, you know, it doesn't have to be big. It doesn't have to be a lot. It doesn't have to be expensive. And sometimes it's just, hey, everybody, we're taking 2 hours off. Do whatever the heck you want. We're celebrating. We won, you know, we don't have to get together, you know, or, hey, everybody, I went and got cupcakes. We're celebrating. Congrats. You did great work.
Okay.
Take a beat, celebrate. It can be small.
Okay. All right.
Okay. With that, let us, anybody else want to comment or ask questions about this process? Anybody else want to check in before I just open it up for broad questions and coaching for on any subject?
I would love to go.
Okay.
Sorry. Now you can hear me better. I was kind of similar to Dorothy, I think. I think sometimes I'm too nice or non-confrontational or indirect, right? So at those times, I wish I were more confident, willing to speak up, confrontational or direct. What I fear I might happen if I do the above, lose respect, not be liked, be talked about. But what I value is peace, like everybody being happy, right? Mm-hmm. The two words I started out with quiet versus, I don't know, direct or confident or opinionated.
Okay. So you think the thing you value that drives you to do too much of that is you value quiet.
Yeah. And peace, right? Okay. Everybody being happy.
Another word might be harmony.
Ooh, harmony. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what might be the opposite of harmony? And when I say that, your first reaction should be nothing good.
Disruption,
right?
Discomfort.
That's when you know you've found it. When the first answer is the opposite of harmony is terrible. It's awful. It's no good. Good. Now we're in the right. Now we found the sweet spot. So, what's the opposite of harmony? Is disruptive positive for you or neutral? Probably not.
Yeah, it's kind of uncomfortable.
Yeah, terrible. It's awful. So, what is neutral or opposite? What's another word that could be neutral or opposite?
Questioning?
No, all of you have words already. Good. Okay. Curious. Is curious the opposite of harmony?
Kind of, I think. It's asking questions instead of just agreeing to everything.
Okay. I'm going to ask you to push it a little bit further. I think curiosity is sort of, it's the opposite, but I think you go a little further. Push yourself a little further out beyond just curiosity. What if you have an opinion, ooh, not a question? What if you're not curious, but you actually have an opinion?
Yeah.
What's the opposite of harmony when you know you have an opinion to express?
I keep going back to disruption.
Yeah, you might have gone too far. So keep bringing back a little bit.
Opinions. Insight.
Oh, I like that. I like that. Okay, great. Insight. Insight is excellent. One of the reasons I love this exercise is it always surprises me. Like, I love the way people come up. Like, I would have never thought educating. I would have never thought insight. I love when you came up with it. And when it's true and it's right and it's yours, it's even more like enjoyable for me. Right. I really enjoy that. So
yeah.
Good. Okay. So insightful or insight.
Yeah.
This is your invitation. Your invitation is to bring insight and insightfulness. Dorothy's invitation is to educate, right? These are totally different frames than being a terrible bitch that no one likes, right? Which is like the fear that all of us have. Especially if you're a woman, right? It's a double standard for women. So insightful and I love it. So beautiful. Okay, thank you for that. Also, by a show of hands, how many people think that those glasses are amazing? the bold red.
Thank you.
Come on.
Thank you. Great.
I bet you get complimented on those a lot.
I do. In airports, everywhere.
Love that stuff. People totally dig it. Oh, and Tracy's got some cool, I'll call those goggles. Got some cool goggles too. Sorry. Hey, Tracy, welcome. Okay. So we have completed, I feel, unless there's anybody else. Yeah.
Can I try again with my second word?
Yes, you can. Yes, you can.
All right. What about perfection and responsive?
Okay. First, let's try it this way. What's the negative opposite of perfection?
Just that something is like wrong and bad.
Wrong and bad. Good. So that's the starting point. How can you push that to be neutral?
This is so hard.
I know. It is hard. There's a reason this isn't found in a lot of leadership training programs, because it's too hard. But it's full of gold when you get it. Okay. And it's way faster than the Enneagram. I love the Enneagram. I've used it for 20 years. It's one of my favorite tools. It's very dense, very complex, very deep. This is one of the fastest ways that I can help somebody get through like a breakthrough, to suddenly go like, oh my gosh, this core personality trait, when I just understand that I'm just need to educate. So let's keep pushing. Keep trying.
Adequate.
Does adequate feel neutral to you?
No.
Negative, isn't it? Okay, keep going. Okay, I'm going to ask you to just keep working with this. Okay. Keep writing thoughts and answers, and we'll come back to you in a little bit. So I'm going to open it up now for broad, any coaching questions on any subject. Now we're off this. I mean, you can come back to the subject if you want to keep doing it, but who has anything they want to talk about? What's going on in work, business, frustrations, fears, concerns, needs?
I had my meeting last week, and I realized that I have 15 people in a meeting, so it's too many people. And so I think that's part of my problem with my meetings.
For sure.
Yeah. So I started trying to divide it up, but we overlap in so many areas that it's like, if I divide it up, it's like people will be in different meetings and they're in meetings more.
Okay.
So can't figure out how to divide this up.
What are the main roles that are causing this overlap? What are the roles that overlap the most?
We have our directors. And so we have our directors that oversee the campuses. And then we have the supervisors, which they kind of work with the directors. And then we have, we're going through two accreditations. So that I had the accreditation team. And so then the main directors of each campus needs to kind of be in that meeting, because we got to make sure we're going through that accreditation process. And it's just, we just overlap. We have an after school director. And so she kind of needs to know what's going on with the morning director. So I just can't figure out, like, otherwise end up in 3 or 4 meetings, and they'd rather have just one big meeting than have to do that. So,
but okay.
horrible because they're so bored. It's so long and boring. So yes. I got to do something.
Okay, good. So I'm going to suggest a couple of things.
Okay.
I want you to, first of all, in module 4, I talk about, and I want you to review some of the early videos of module 4, where I talk about how to design good structures. So okay. It's possible that your structure is wrong, but you have to redefine job descriptions, accountabilities, authorities, so that you have the right kind of cascade of power and information, and you're eliminating some overlap. So the first 4 videos of module 4 introduce the words, the ideas, the tools that you can use to begin to describe whether or not you even have the right roles.
Okay.
So I think that's step one. Why don't you do that? And then next week we'll come back. And if you want to just share like, okay, I reviewed that. I looked at my roles, and it's not like all the answers are in those first 4 videos. I just give you food for thought so that you can start to look at your team and go, if there was another way to organize this more efficiently. And here's the key about restructuring. This goes for everybody. Anytime you're going to try to restructure your team or your organization, you must first do it agnostically. Here's what that means. You remove all humans and personalities from the discussion.
Okay.
And you just say, if I were going to start fresh and I were going to design a team that I know I want, here's exactly what it would look like. Then you go, now I have humans that I'm already paying. Where do they fit? And if they don't fit, then you have to have a hard conversation with yourself, which is you've got an ideal structure over here. And by the way, as organizations grow, morph, and evolve, structures evolve and people have to come and go. It's just a normal part of organizations scaling and growing.
Right.
So you first want to then go, okay, here are my A-plus players who I just absolutely love and need and want to keep.
Okay.
Here are the roles that I know I most need and want. Here's where I think they would fit best. And then you have the conversations with them first. And you say, you're one of my A-plus players. I want to keep you. You're the best. But our structure is broken. It's not working. And here's the way that I think it should be structured. And I'd like you to occupy this role. How does that feel for you? Does that excite you? If they're like, that is the worst thing I could ever imagine. Okay. Then you got to negotiate a little bit potentially. Most of the time they're going to go, yeah, I could probably do that. And then you might discover, like, you know what? There's an open role that nobody really fits, to be honest. And it would be a disservice to them and the organization if I promoted this person into that role because they're just not capable.
Right.
And so then it's a conversation about, do they live in the organization in some other way? And you give an invitation to live in that new way, or you begin the process of transitioning them out.
Okay.
But that's step number one, is just start with a blank slate. You have no employees. You have no team. You know you're responsible for running this business. How would you draw the org chart? Who would be responsible for what? All of that's explained in greater detail in the first 4 videos of mine.
Okay.
Take a crack at that, and then we'll come back. And then I think that'll probably help fix your meeting problem pretty much automatically.
That would be wonderful. Thank you.
You bet. Okay, good. Other questions? Otherwise, I'm going to start calling on people. You don't want that.
I have something.
Okay.
Not necessarily a question, but I wasn't able to attend last week because I was having a meeting with my boss, and this whole our team being affected by layoffs is just progressing. And it's funny, kind of what you were just talking about with Renee was just like, that's essentially what the client is doing, but maybe with a lot less finesse and organization, if I'm being honest. And it seems like, so essentially my role, I currently oversee the team in North America, but because our global teams are being reduced and we are moving towards a discipline model rather than a regional model, then it's no longer needed for me to oversee North America. And what, like, my boss has basically said, like, I don't know if your role will be affected from a client standpoint, but I still need you on the team. Would you want to do this other role? And I was like, yeah, that's actually what I prefer to do. But now I'm stuck in this horrible limbo of like, wait a minute, you just said that the client doesn't need my current role. But you want me to do something else. And so I'm just kind of like, all right, well, I might get laid off in a month, but between now and then, I have to do my best to support the team and to support my boss and providing her information on everyone so that she can choose who's going to be affected. And I guess what I'm asking is just like, how do I just keep going? Like nothing is wrong with the whole rest of the team. And how do I help, my boss to shape what my new role could look like so that she can actually make that happen? I don't know. That's really like a lot. Well,
the first thing I would say is, I read this as good news for you, not bad news. And so as much as you're feeling anxiety and uncertainty, one thing I would just invite you into is to hold the uncertainty and live with it for a little bit in the same way that I might suggest you go and exercise muscles. What you're feeling now is what business leaders, business owners, as they get higher or bigger or more responsibility, they feel they have to have the capacity to carry more uncertainty, unknowing.
Yeah,
that happens more and more. And so what's really beautiful about this is you're getting, it's like they're putting a couple of extra weights on either side of the squat rack for you to push some weight, and you're going to strain your muscles. And so I wouldn't read this as bad news. I wouldn't read those difficult feelings as like, oh no, how do I get rid of them? I would say, how do I step into them and demonstrate my capacity? How do I expand my capacity so I can hold more of this ambivalence and ambiguous situation? That's a muscle.
Yeah.
And it's a critical muscle for leaders. The other muscle you're going to be installing is the boundary muscle, which is sometimes in companies, transparency is the best thing you can do. And sometimes privacy and boundaries is the best thing you need, right? That's a polarity. It's a built-in polarity that you can never solve. But there may be a moment in time where the worst thing you can do is hide information. And there's another moment in time where the best thing you can do is hide information. Mm-hmm. So you want to be asking the question, where do I want to calibrate this boundary line between me and my team? What would a great leader need to provide for the team? Sometimes what they need to provide for the team is, we've talked about this before, preach from your scars, not your wounds. Mm-hmm. You know, if I, as a preacher, got up on a Sunday morning on Easter and was like, you know what, I'm doubting that Jesus is even real. I'm really struggling with that. That would be bad. Even if it were real, even if I were really feeling that, I shouldn't bring that to the community on a Sunday morning. But I could bring it to the community a year later and say, you know, a year ago on Easter, I got a reveal. I was really struggling. I didn't know if I believed this or whatever. Today, I'm feeling much better, right? Or it's the general on the battlefield. It's like, we're going to win. It's okay. I can see what you guys can, we're going to be okay. And you just need that like boost. And it's not that they know for a fact that's going to happen. It's that they bring that will to the situation as best they can because they know that it's serving the troops. Mm-hmm. It's not a lie either. It's just from where I sit, we're going to be fine.
Well, and to be clear, like none of my team knows that this is happening at all.
Right.
So I'm having to like have one-on-one conversations with people who I know are going to be affected. And I'm like, totally, let's talk about how we can, here, I'm going to continue coaching you in this area, or I'm going to recommend some of these trainings that we have available in our company because you want to further develop this skill. And that's how you're going to get to the next step in this role with this company. And I'm like, but in a month, you're going to get laid off. And it's just,
yeah, that is hard. I'll suggest that you reframe it internally, which is, if you don't have any ability to influence who knows what when, which is understandable, right. You wouldn't. You actually have a chance to mentor someone, even if they're not going to stay at the company. The value, the thing they're going to learn, the thing they're going to train in is going to benefit them, whether they're at this company or another company. There are tools, there are resources. So that's how you partition that, so that you know, okay, at minimum, I know I'm helping them in this way, because I'm sort of handcuffed in my ability to share information. Then I can pour into them however I can while they're here.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you don't really know the future. So it's okay to not share it because you don't know it.
Yeah.
You have a hypothesis, you have a pretty good guess, but tomorrow everybody could blow up in a nuclear explosion. So proceed as if things are okay.
Yeah. And then what about, and I don't want to hog this too much more, but one of the things that my boss asked me about was, you know, this, like, could I shift you? So instead of overseeing the North America team, could I focus your role a little bit more on, like, sort of this ambiguous sort of training role where I'm focused on more of a global perspective, leading, like, not doing actual training, but organizing training initiatives and basically, like, not an HR role, obviously, but like organizational development, essentially, for our internal agency team, and focusing more on our people and less on like client relationships. And so what I did is I basically like sort of wrote a job description and just bullet points, not like a whole thing, but shared it with my boss based on the conversation that she had. And she was like, this is what I want to do with you. I just don't know if it's possible. And then I've basically just been like, look, update me when you can. Otherwise, I'm just going to be here to support you because I don't envy your position, and just let me know how I can continue to help. You know, I get it. My role is up in the air, but you know, like, what do you need from me right now? But like, is that really all I can do? Or is there anything else you think I could do to, I mean, I guess I'm kind of answering my own question, but essentially by showing her that I'm really just here to be a team player and support her. And, you know, here's what I want to do. And, you know, that's what I want to do, but I'm not going to push you to tell me anything. I'm just going to do all honestly, the things that you want me to do, and then I'm showing that I should be part of the team moving forward, for sure.
Yeah, I think you're doing fine. I think you're doing fine. There's nothing else you can do. You're doing great.
All right, cool. Yeah, that's it then. Wish me luck, everyone.
Yeah.
We're praying for you.
Yeah, thank you. Sure.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing all that, Allie. I know it's a hard time to be in that kind of in-between liminal place.
I remember when I first mentioned there were going to be layoffs, you're like, okay, that's going to be a really emotional experience. And I was like, gosh, I hope not. And now a couple of weeks later, I'm like, wow, shit, you were right. So anyway, thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Yeah. Thank you for sharing. Others, who else has anything they want to check in on, talk through?
I'll jump in. Mm-hmm. I don't really have a question, but I just have to say that I had to do a huge presentation last week. I'm in a new role and a new position, so I had to present on our division to the executive leadership team at a retreat last week. And I watched your videos on presenting, and it was incredibly helpful. Just how to build the slides to deliver your message. It was a big help.
Oh, I'm so glad. I'm so glad. I'm working with the CEO right now on his fundraise, and he's got to raise like $100 million. And he sent me a presentation. It violated every rule in the book. So
my presentation, the first draft of my presentation was so much text and outlines like on the slides. I was like, well, we're not going to do that.
Yeah, that's pretty different.
Yeah. So it really helped me kind of focus in. It took me a long time to figure it out, but yeah, watching your videos really helped me kind of pull it together.
So glad to hear that. Awesome.
Can I share something that happened to me last Friday that put me on sleepless nights the whole entire weekend?
Yeah.
So I had gone to it, and it's kind of a political thing. So I'm hoping I'm not going to offend anyone, but we are a Christian school. So I had gone to a meeting on Monday night about whose children are they? And then they had these books of transgenders, sex education for elementary kids. That was, I felt very inappropriate for that age. The unicorn sex, just all those kind of things. So I took pictures of the books, and then I came back to work the next day and I sent it to my whole staff, which is what 55 staff I have, saying, this is why our school needs to keep pushing forward. This is why we got to raise these kids up, become strong Christian leaders. That's all I said. And a teacher was like, 2 days later, she came to work, acted fine. And then on Friday, she walked in, put a letter down on the desk and walked out and just quit and just said how she didn't agree with the philosophy of the school. She didn't agree with what we were doing and she couldn't work for us anymore, basically, in a nutshell, mentioned my name, how upset she was. And it just kind of caught me off guard. But the positive thing about the whole thing is my admin team was standing right behind me, 110%. And said, we're doing the right thing. And then the teachers that do know about it, I have not felt any slack with them. And then we're inside a church. The pastor of the church walked in. He said, we're right here with you. We're standing with you through this whole thing. So that was the positive thing of it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would say a big part of that doesn't sound like a terrible thing to me, given that you have clearly defined values that are at odds with this person. And who knows, that person may have a kid who's going through something really hard and you seem parochial and bigoted and backwards. And so they're upset about that because they're going to see their kid go through a hard life for a while. And right. That's not really your problem. It's just the reality that this is what happens in a world that's highly polarized by social media. And look, I worked as a pastor, so I'm intimately familiar with people getting deeply offended and taking sides and wanting me to take up a banner and all that fun stuff. So as long as you feel like you're aligned with your own integrity and you've got the backing of who you want, then that person just wasn't a fit.
Right. That's what I just
wasn't a fit. Yeah.
But we had no idea. She worked with us for 2 years. I had no idea that she felt that way, but it was all good. So
yeah, but you will have to begin to contend with how are you going, what's your pedagogy for people who are dealing with a whole new paradigm of human sexuality and gender identity.
Right.
And you'll have to develop that. And some people are going to hate you for it. And some people are going to think you're a hero and welcome to a world of polarities. You know, that's an intense kind of a thing to walk into. So I'm sorry that you have to do that, but that is where we are now. Right. In the
world. Yep. Exactly.
Appreciate that. I'm going to call on Tracy. Tracy, I feel like I've seen you on these calls, but I haven't heard from you once yet. So I just want to check in. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Okay. I'm traveling right now. So I'm kind of like in and out off of on the video, but I've been listening in. I was just in an Uber. So I was hoping you weren't going to call on me because that guy was going to have to hear me talk, but I'm in the hotel lobby now. Good. But things are going well with our salon teams. We have not yet had like our group manager meeting, but we have it coming up and Carrie and I are both excited to kind of use the layout of the meetings that you kind of set up and the task. What did you call them? Something with monkeys?
Monkeys. Yeah, I just call them monkeys. Yeah. But yeah. Action items is another word. If you don't want to use jargon, it's just an action item. Yep.
Yeah. I'm most excited about that. So we just had our big salon party where we give out awards and whatnot. And that was really good. I always feel like that brings our team together and really motivates people. And I cannot remember, Carrie can probably remind me, but we had like 7 six-figure stylist awards to give out. And we had one girl
Sorry, it's kind of loud in here.
No problem.
We had one girl that hit a multiple six-figure award in our salon. So that was the first time we had done that. So that was really cool. And it just is always encouraging to the younger ones to work hard for it. So
absolutely. Very smart. Very smart to do that.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Good. Well, you know, I know when we had your initial call, there were a whole lot of things you guys were wanting to work out and make sure were happening. So I just wanted to check in and make sure you're getting the support you needed. And it sounds like you've got a good first step, which is getting the meeting protocol set up. That's going to be great. It's going to be
And we have had our one-on-ones with each of our stylists kind of set the goals. And then we're going to check back in with them a month from now and see where they're at.
Excellent. Excellent. I think those are great first steps of stabilizing some things and getting you ready to scale even more.
Yeah.
Congratulations. And I know a big part that I want to make sure we don't walk past is how do we continue to get the two of you up and out of being too much of an employee? You know, there's a transition period where you're going to be an employee, but eventually get you more and more to be an owner rather than an employee.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, we're not there yet, but we're working towards it.
Well, and that's what I can help you get to as we go through this. So keep at it.
Well, thank you.
Awesome. You bet. Okay. Who else has something, anything? And if nothing, we can close out early. Or we could just stare at each other for another 20 minutes. It's fine too. Okay. Going once. Going twice. Sold. All right. Thanks, everybody. Great to be with you.
Great call today. Thank you. Hey, everyone.